At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
Welcome back to another episode of Seven Deadly Sinners. Thank you guys so much for listening. I hope you're having the happiest of holidays, and I'm just so grateful for you all. The friendships I've formed with listeners, the DMs and emails we've exchanged, your listener stories, and keep sending those in. I like those episodes. Any story, any weird family history, any hometown kind of murder situation, any cryptid, real into cryptids still, guys, can't stop, won't stop. Anything you have to tell me about your very interesting life. Seriously, it's all up for grabs. It's all up for grabs. I love receiving those. And I also love your guys' case suggestions. And it just makes me feel like there's such a cool community of all of us out there. And it starts with you guys, and I'm very grateful, so thank you. Now, on to the case. We have covered a lot of cults over the last 3 years, and so many of them have had the same MO. But this has been a difficult one to research because it not only involves a cult leader on the lam from the FBI, but it also details the alleged deaths and disappearances of several young children, toddlers. And because this episode will deal with depictions of physical and religious abuse, please take care when listening. And it's worth noting, the organization here has a name commonly found in church circles across the country, but it is not affiliated with any other church of the same name. Innocent little Iman Harper was taken to live at the House of Prayer for All People as an infant in 1986. His mother, Shonda, was a young mother, a 16-year-old teenager, and was unable to care for him. He was born in Chicago, and his biological grandmother, Dorothy Harper, would later tell investigators that the family decided to let a family friend care for the baby. Shonda would later go on to say that she was reluctant to put the baby up for adoption, so she decided being raised by her mother's lifelong friend was the next best thing. It seems like a great option under the circumstances, and Shonda at that time was able to visit her son several times before the family friend abruptly moved to a religious community in Florida, run by self-proclaimed prophetess Anna Young, or Mother Anna, taking baby Iman with her. This ideal setup in an unideal situation drastically changed that day. Upon arriving at the compound, Iman was ushered around and introduced to those living on the compound as Moses. Mother Anna's own daughter, Joy, recalled later to a local TV station that Iman was introduced to those living on the compound, including Anna's own daughter, Joy, as Moses. Joy was told that he was their new brother, and she believed that he had been adopted into her family. Joy would later tell a local TV station, WTLV, that it was such a joy, the thought that a baby was going to be at the property. But we're getting a bit ahead of ourselves here. So who is Mother Anna, and how did this compound come to be? It all started when Anna and her husband, Robert Davidson, purchased the Micanopy, Florida property in 1983 and turned it into a sort of boarding school called House of Prayer for All People, eventually then turning it into a nonprofit under the same name in 1985. At the time, the population of this small Florida town was in the mere 100s, and it dubbed itself the town that time forgot. So needless to say, they were probably a little freaked out that an alleged cult showed up on their doorstep. The property was located on an isolated stretch of 138th Ave off Wacahuta Road and was initially advertised as a place to help adults get over substance abuse issues, and occasionally they would also bring their children there. The facility remained active through the early 1990s, and it was a relatively small community with 24 members at its peak. But like many religious guru types before her, Mother Anna embraced her own interpretation of the Bible, working it into this group, and it turned into her own strict ideology. Members were required to change their birth names to biblical ones and would refer to one another as brother or sister. They wore holy clothes, covering their bodies from head to toe, consistent to those that would have been worn in Old Testament times. Long robes, head coverings for women, and men were required to grow beards. They were also expected to adhere to a strict Levitical diet. The biblical book requires that followers shall not eat among all things that swarm upon the earth, anything that crawls on its belly, or anything that walks on fours, or anything that has many legs, for they are an abomination. Okay. So hang on. So no bees swarming. Can't eat those. Does that eliminate honey? Anything crawling on a belly. Okay, easy. Not interested in eating snakes, but I really don't know what that means. But does crawling on the belly have anything to do with snakes or maybe someone's drunk uncle? Like, obviously you don't want to eat him. Like, what else crawls on their belly? God, I'm going to feel real stupid if there's like some really obvious animals that do. I'm just thinking of a snake. And do we call that their belly? Okay, moving on. So then nothing on all fours. So I'm guessing zero meat. But now where does fish stand? Do they swim on their belly technically? I love fish. I couldn't give that up. There's just too many rules. But I can get behind this one. Anything that has many legs. I'm down with this. So no centipedes in my diet. I'm okay with that, friends. But this doesn't really make a lot of sense. And I am thrilled for all of us to hear where Mother Anna takes this. But let's give Mother Anna a little bit of credit. You know, maybe, just maybe, aside from the strict ground rules, this organization started out with good intentions, like being a safe haven of sorts for people from all walks of life to turn their lives around. A place for second chances. A utopian society where everyone would share their possessions and want for nothing. And it seemed like everyone loved and adored Mother Anna, and even worshipped her and idolized her. Well, now we're getting a little... It's going into that scary territory, but let's hear her out, guys, okay? Okay, fine. Things really quickly started to take a very scary turn. And this one, yeah, in her case, it was a very, very dark turn. What's that saying? With great power comes great responsibility. Well, soon the once adored leader's power became corrupted. And shortly after that, the punishments were cast down for the sins of her followers. Any sin they committed, punished. She began to develop a very dark interpretation of the Pentecostal faith, and her own daughter remembered at a point in which she would speak in tongues as if she were filled with the Holy Spirit while subjecting a young boy to a severe lashing. You see, everyone, even babies and children, were expected to adhere to the strict house rules or face physical punishment, exorcisms, chemical baths, or beatings. Yes, you heard me. Chemical baths. She was charismatic, though, and she controlled her followers with violent discipline, starvation, and isolation. Pure religious intimidation. Their leader preyed on vulnerable members of society, like single mothers, who were offered free room and board. And it was nearly impossible for anyone to leave. Any money that members might earn from an outside job was given right back to their twisted religious community. God, they're all this. It is a playbook. God, all of us could start. At this point, if you've been listening to Seven Deadly Sinners for, you know, 3 years, I think that's how long it's been. That's what I said earlier, but who knows. And I say this all the time, like, if I wanted to start a cult, yeah, I know the playbook now. But, like, I know you guys are too. We're good people. Like, anyone now that we have, like, you've researched this stuff enough, like, yeah, Sadly, it's not that hard to trick people. And that's not to shame the people that get tricked, but it's because these people are following a playbook of cult leaders before them, or religious leaders before them, or just anyone in a position of manipulation and coercive control. Like, I mean, read a book about it. It's not that hard, but please don't do it. I know you guys won't, but it's really, truly crazy how often this happens and how many cults and coercive groups there are that we don't even know about. I mean, this podcast could probably go for the next 50 years just covering a new cult every week. There are so many. Some very small, some on the outskirts, some very big and well-known like Jonestown, but all so similar. And the members essentially also became Mother Anna's foot soldiers. The members carried out orders from their leader that required them to beat and starve other adults and children. In this follower's account, let's just say major trigger warning here. Odie Poe was one of Anna's first followers and moved from the Atlanta area to the compound with Anna and her husband, who went on to change his name from Robert to Jonah. Odie's name would later be changed by the group to the Elder Adam. And I'm not sure which came first, the name change or the fact that he was tempted by a woman, like the biblical Adam. But Anna accused the man of having sex with the woman, and his punishment was to cut off his penis. His relatives relayed to authorities that he did this himself. He literally iced it and then cut it off, leading to severe bleeding and an infection. You know what the Bible says? If your hand offends you, you cut it off. If your eyes offend you, you pluck them out. This was Anna's rationale, at least it seems. And no one dared to question it. I have no idea if she actually said that. Anna, that was a joke. All right, everyone. And even after this incident, the man stayed true to Anna and her world. It's so heartbreaking. As his daughter Shannon and son Thomas also did. And they saw torturous things that their own eyes will never forget. Severe treatment that didn't discriminate against the age of any member. Children especially would find themselves locked in cages or beaten with electrical cords. Adults were also expected to hurt themselves as well when necessary. Mother Anna would sleep in the same room as the children living on the property and would cut them off from their biological mothers. Control, control, control. Not long after little Moses joined the flock in 1988, Anna's husband was found fatally pinned under a truck at a nearby junkyard, which police have since considered suspicious. Yeah, I think it's suspicious. I think you're on the right track, police there. The truck allegedly slipped off its jack and crushed him to death. Regardless of how it happened, though, Anna's demeanor toward the young boy and her flock as a whole changed drastically around that time. Moses, seemingly initially kind of like the chosen one, things changed for him. Anna's daughter Joy said in an interview, he started getting in trouble all the time. I do remember his beatings, a lot of his whippings. She loved him, but I do think part of her cruelty to him was her grief with my dad. I'd also like to state that I feel really icky calling this kid Moses when his mom named him Iman. It just feels so manipulative, but we are going to continue to call him Moses. But just remember, his birth name was Iman. But the treatment of Moses got worse and worse. Joy, Mother Anna's daughter, and other members of the House of Prayer would often find the toddler locked in a closet and famished from lack of food and water. He's a toddler. He's a little boy. He was probably only 2 years old at this point. Joy described his appearance later in an interview, and it's really heartbreaking. She said, I remember once he was starving, and I had to give him some water. I remember, like, looking how pitiful he looked. His eyes were, like, big and glassy, and there was crust all over his lips. It was just like his lips looked like they were diseased. And it's something that Joy would later say in interviews that she thought it was normal at the time because she was also brainwashed. She didn't know anything else. She believed everything her mother said and believed that she was the voice of God. And she went along with these punishments because she was an only child, and without her own voice of reason, she just... Mama knows best. And she didn't want to be the one on the receiving end of the next beating as well. In 2022, Joy went on Dr. Phil and described what she would see at the compound on a regular basis, all under the order of her mother.
Our church community, you know, believed that my mother was basically the voice of God. You're mentioning the fasting. Iman Harper, who I still have nightmares about. We all as a church would have to fast and pray, 3-day fast. No food, no water. And it didn't matter how old the children were, they also had to fast. Mm-hmm. And Iman Harper had to fast as well. And in different times of the punishment, he wasn't allowed to eat or drink or anything. I remember being a child once. I had to give him his water after he had went through a fast for as a punishment. And he was starving. And I remember the dead skin from his lips being so much it touched my finger. And I remember pulling away. I was a little kid myself. I was scared. And I remember other children, some of the pictures you saw on the screen, their mothers were there with them. And they witnessed their children being beat. One of the other children was beat so much she started having, you know, seizures, and one of those seizures killed her.
And then, tragically, one day, little Iman Moses vanished. Mother Anna explained to the group that he had gone on to live in a monastery to become a priest. Okay, a priest as a toddler. A member at the time, Thomas, Elder Adam's son, was convinced that the boy had been killed. He later told the court that he went for a walk in the woods and returned to see some members of the group at a burn barrel. He believed the group had decided to burn the boy's body. Thomas's sister Sharon would later tell authorities that she had seen the boy's dead body in a straw hamper between 1988 and 1989. Iman would have just been 2 or 3 years old at the time. But there was no body. No evidence. And authorities couldn't seem to quite get any allegations to stick against Anna. Until years later, when she was convicted of abusing a 12-year-old girl named Nikki. She had told the girl to bathe in bleach because she allegedly smelled and because the bleach would burn the evil out of her. And another major trigger warning here. This is going to be hard to read. Anna filled a metal tub with hot water, half a box of Ultra Tide, bleach, and 2 caps of bubble bath liquid. And cult members held the preteen down in the bath while her skin began to blister almost immediately. The girl was then tied to her bedpost so she couldn't tamper with the open sores left on her body. Her parents were then called and told about the incident, thankfully, I guess, and they were able to move her back home to South Carolina, where she ended up getting treatment at a burn ward. Thankfully, she was saved. This, of course, caused permanent damage to the young girl's skin, though, and resulted in the parents filing charges against the cult leader. The cult dissolved in 1992, shortly after the incident, and Mother Anna ran, fleeing first to Georgia, then to Ohio, and her hometown of Chicago. She was eventually arrested 8 years later in Alton, Illinois, where she was found in 2001 at a relative's attic and sentenced to a mere 6 months and 12 days in jail for the bleach crime. Upon her release, she moved to Marietta, Georgia, and kept her past hidden, you know, as well as she could from her neighbors and the entire community, and she got away with this for about 15 years. And then in 2016, the puzzle pieces seemed to click together. They were on her trail, and the sheriff's office in Alacocha County, Florida, began digging into Anna's past based on a tip from her own daughter, Joy. After the two had gotten in a shouting match over how Joy was raising her children. Quote, "How can you tell me how to raise my children when you killed two children?" Joy asked her mother, according to an article in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. And here's a chilling clip from an interview Joy did with Life Therapy on TV One, explaining that night and how it changed the trajectory of her mother's life forever.
This particular night, I was furious. I'd had enough, and I blurted out before I knew it, "How can you tell me how to take care of my child when you killed two children?" And it was in front of my two sons.
You said that?
I said it out loud. And when I said it, I was like, oh my God. And I saw the look on her face, the look. I don't want to start crying.
It's okay.
The look that I dreaded all these years, I saw it.
What was the look?
The look of guilt. When we would get those arguments, I mean, I respected my mom. I would just look to her like just a few steps lower than God. You know, like she is this holy woman. But, you know, after going on the run and seeing things, you know, that pedestal was a little lowered. She was a human being, but I still had reverence for her. But when we would argue, I would always say things to her that even bothered me. Like, why am I talking? Like, I would say, "You're not going to beat me like Sister Lois, Sister Priscilla. You're not going to do me like those people. You're not going to treat me like that." And I would stop myself short, always short of saying, "And you're not going to kill me like you did Moses." I would never say it. I would be tempted.
But I would never say it. Why do you think?
Because I didn't want to know for certain.
And once I said it,
I knew for certain.
And then what?
And then I couldn't stop saying it. Because
my
mom never apologized to me when we had fights, even if she was in the wrong, even if I was in the wrong. But she followed me and she said, "You just killed five people." I said, "What do you mean?" She said, "You killed yourself and all four of your children."
In that phone call, she is heard asking authorities, "How can I snitch on my mom? I don't know if I'm doing the right thing. Like, is this something that a family is never supposed to tell?" Joy explains this further on Dr. Phil, and thank God she found the strength to go through with it.
After, you know, I spoke up regarding my mom, I wanted to speak to someone else, just like I wanted to breathe air, that had spoken up against someone that they love, knowing that that person would suffer consequence for what they did.
You actually turned your mother in.
Yes, there was a part of me that hoped that my memories were, you know, mistaken, and that there was a chance that maybe I, because of all the other sufferings, I was delusional a little bit. I was hoping that it wasn't true, but I knew that I could no longer live with myself without speaking up, because I felt like, what kind of mother, what kind of person am I if I'm okay with the fact that I believe that my mother is responsible for a child's death? So, you know, I just realized that, you know, in going through that, and then, of course, learning the truth that it really was accurate, my memories were accurate, that a lot of people don't speak up because they feel like they're going to be this label as a tattletale, a snitch, or whatever.
The police department's press release said that they were able to substantiate that Young had not only tortured children, but had committed premeditated first-degree homicide of a child. And that child, sadly, was little Iman Harper. In December of 2017, Mother Anna was finally arrested near Atlanta on a first-degree murder warrant of the death of Iman, as well as manslaughter charges for another child we will discuss in a minute. She had been working as a home health care worker, wonderful, and her cover was blown when a co-worker saw her face in an FBI Most Wanted National Enquirer article. She had just decorated her lawn for Christmas. She flew under the radar for so long. But time was up. People who had lived at the House of Prayer for All People compound were cooperating with investigators who called the property a house of horrors, where a lot of abuse took place. Alachua County Sheriff's spokesperson at the time, added in an interview with WGFL News that many of the witnesses were children that were abused, that went through this and experienced it, and saw not only their own abuse, but other children being abused. They believed that they were getting the devil out of them. But what's interesting too, and I guess on a good note, former members weren't cooperating with authorities with a motive of revenge. They were actually just helping because it was the right thing to do, and maybe to help ease their own guilt. It soon became clear that Iman and 12-year-old Nikki weren't the only victims, though. Authorities were piecing together Anna's path across the United States from the 1960s forward and discovered potential forensic evidence while examining the compound, which authorities believe could be connected to a trail of missing children. Also, side note, I have not been able to find much, if any, information about Anna Young before starting her house of prayer, but it's something I really want to look further into. The sheriff's spokesperson told reporters they believe there are many, many more crimes in Young's past. We can document other states and other missing children that we believe are tied to this, he said. Detectives would later say that potential abuse victims had been identified from back to 1968, when Anna was just in her 20s. Another one of her many victims was John Neal, who was placed with his sister, Katonia Jackson, at the facility when he was just 6 years old. John recalled a brutal beating he endured over a piece of candy shortly after their arrival to the compound. Anna ordered him to receive 33 lashes, referencing the age of Jesus at the time of his death. John remembered his baby sister being told to stand for hours and not sleep. She was forced to run in place and say Jesus over and over again, and wasn't allowed to eat. She also had a history of seizures, and her medication was withheld from her. And sadly, because this medication wasn't given to the 2-year-old, she died of a seizure. Elder Adams' daughter Sharon remembered being sentenced to the box several times before challenging Anna as she got older. Sharon eventually left the cult in her 30s, leaving her father and brother behind. Another potential victim too? Well, we're gonna have to turn the calendar back a bit. You see, before there was Mother Anna, there was Anna Davidson, a woman who lived in Chicago with her husband and children and loved disco. She wasn't necessarily religious, but she was strict. And over Labor Day weekend in 1973, something changed. Her 6-year-old stepdaughter, Catherine, simply vanished while the family was at a state park enjoying a picnic. At least that's what the general public was led to believe at the time. The siblings at one point rushed down to the water, and within mere minutes, Catherine had disappeared. The entire family gave authorities the exact same story. Hundreds of well-wishers came from Detroit, northern Iowa, and Indiana to search for the young girl. Even helicopters searched the lake waters, but there was no trace of the girl. Joy would later go on to say that her half-sister had been beaten, tied up, and left to die in a closet in the family's Chicago apartment. She would tell the police that she heard scratching in the closet over the course of an entire night that then just suddenly stopped. And when she peered into the small space, she saw Kathy's body limp inside. Several days after the disappearance, local Michigan police would go on to say that they found Anna and Robert sitting in a station wagon with another couple, laughing and drinking together, which seemed suspicious.
Suspicious.
Yeah, I think that that's an absolute understatement. Joy believed that Kathy's death was a terrible accident, and the religion the family embraced after the fact was their attempt at penance, likely a suggestion by her mother. Before the compound in Florida was even a thought, though, the family then moved to a town 50 miles south of Atlanta and began teaching what would eventually become the House of Prayer for All People doctrine. And the rest is history. The cult's 4-acre compound was set to be auctioned off in February of 2020. And I find this quote from the auctioneer a bit shocking. He said, "Is this not gorgeous? When I first walked in, I thought, this is my dream house. I know it's his job to hype people up, but like, oh, looking at the photos of this shabby-looking red wooden structure built in 1900, that's not my first thought. And I assume, or hopefully he did some research on what happened at that compound. I don't know, I'll make sure to show some photos on our Instagram. It just doesn't look like something in terrific condition or something that would be a dream to a lot of people, especially given the history. But maybe the 5 bedrooms and 5 bathrooms, a secret space, a secret door, a hidden child-sized section at the bottom of a stairwell, religious inscriptions written by children when the sidewalks were poured that have marked a moment in time for decades now. I just don't see that that's a dream spot. I think it's a very sad, almost cemetery. I digress. But the property did end up selling for $170,000. Shortly after the sale, in July of 2020, bail was set for the then 78-year-old cult leader at a whopping $2.5 million. The judge decided on this after a 45-minute hearing. And according to the Gainesville Sun, the judge believed that strong evidence of Young's guilt exists, and the primary reason cited by her attorneys, the COVID-19 outbreak in the jail, was not enough to warrant that bail be set was more attainable by Young. Basically, we don't want her to be able to make bail even if the COVID-19 outbreak might be detrimental to her health in prison. So regardless of Anna's chronic kidney disease and hypertension at the time of COVID, the judge said that a jail would be a facility for higher risk of spread, but that alone, or merely age and susceptibility, are not sufficient to compel release of individuals. He also added that the evidence he has reviewed is persuasive, and that is something the court is going to consider when weighing bond. There is a great amount of evidence pointing to guilt. Her public defender claimed that Anna was charged with a particularly unusual set of crimes because of unusual evidence. A 30-year-old case with no body and witnesses that all had various motives. Anna's original plea was not guilty. She changed her plea to no contest for the best interest of her family, though, stating, "I just thank my attorneys and my family, and I just say, God bless everyone, and I know that God knows the whole truth and nothing but the truth." In response, Joy, her daughter, told the judge, "She is and always will be my mother, who I will love until the day that I die, but today, I am here as a voice for Iman Harper, or as I knew him, Moses Young." She blamed her mother's actions on mental illness. She said it runs in the family, which could very well be true. But it doesn't change the heartbreak and the loss of these children. And then in early 2021, at the age of 79, Mother Anna changed her plea to no contest to second-degree murder of the death of Iman Harper and no contest to the charge of manslaughter in the death of Ketanya Jackson, and was sentenced to 30 years in prison, as well as 15 years for the manslaughter death of little Ketanya. Her statement of admission simply was this: "Iman Harper and Ketanya Jackson died. I, Anna Elizabeth Young, am responsible for their deaths." Joy testified during the trial that she still is haunted by Iman's voice. She said, "Moses only lived a few short years, but he taught me life is too big to be swept under a rug, imprisoned in a home, or buried in the ground." According to local station WUFT, she added that she would also hear the young boy's voice while driving. "I would hear his voice so loud in my head that I would smash on the brakes and pray I wouldn't get hit by a car behind me. I once screamed out loud at God to take the words that I last heard Moses speak in the closet so they would stop tormenting me in my dreams as I worked, as I ate, as I tried to have enjoyable experiences." John Neal, Katanya's brother, told the New York Post, "We still love and miss her to this day. She was a human being. She was good. She was loved. She would have been 40 years old this year." He also stated at the hearing that some of the brutality inflicted was even at my own hands, at the direction of the person who took her life. I've had to live with these memories my entire life. So heartbreaking. Here's a clip of John talking with WCJB News after the sentence was read in court.
It feels good because this has been a long time coming. My sister was killed 38 years ago. And during those 38 years, I often wondered if this day would ever come.
The girl's mother, Leah Vera Jackson, added that Kay was beat to death. John was nearly beat to death. And his scars on his back that are still there, we were all beat. I'm here to stand up for my daughter and say justice was done. It hurts, but justice has been done. The presiding judge then perhaps wrapped up the proceedings with the best possible sentence. All innocent blood cries out from the ground for an answer. Only the cowardly would fail to join in that cry and desire that justice be done. Adding that he hoped the sentencing would provide closure and healing to surviving victims. Annie Young died in prison only a short time later, on March 30th of 2021, 42 days after her sentence. The cause of death was undetermined, though her daughter Joy said her mother was on 100% oxygen before she died. Brave Joy has been haunted by her own guilt. The things she saw and the things she remembers smelling that she can't get out of her mind, the things of nightmares, I'd imagine. She started a group called Prevent the Pain to help others struggling with their own memories in an effort to help them find the courage to speak up and speak out, taking ownership of the potential tattletale label because it might just save someone's life. And while Joy has lost contact with her family, who deny Anna's responsibility in any deaths, she has to live with thinking that if the family had spoken up sooner, none of this would have happened. As she explained to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, "It was just the way we lived. I didn't think there was anything wrong with it at the time. It wasn't anything that was abnormal to me. We were our own little kingdom and she was the queen." She said, "As I started getting older, I wanted to be accepted by other people. I realized we were different then." And we will end this episode on this note. Iman's remains have never been found. Whether they were burned, as some of the cult members believe, is still unknown. In fact, authorities and forensic scientists spent 2 weeks digging around the property grounds and found no shred of evidence of human remains. But this is a case we're going to be keeping an eye out on. Even in light of Mother Anna's death, it doesn't matter because of the numerous other potential victims mentioned by the authorities involved in this case. Iman needs justice, and if those other kids were involved, they deserve justice as well. Thank you guys so much for listening. I just love you. And if you're enjoying the show, please leave a 5-star rating and positive review on Apple Podcasts, and I'll see you next week. Bye.